Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, I interview a good friend of mine who runs an eight-figure fishing e-commerce business. This business started from $15,000 and has grown into pretty much, I would imagine, the biggest fishing shop in New Zealand and also expanded it into Australia. So if Graham can create an eight-figure business in such a small country as New Zealand, then surely we can do the same in bigger markets. So it's an interesting journey he's been on, and so let's get started. Okay, so here today I am joined with Graham Decker from a company called Marine Deals, and this is I think you're probably the biggest fishing, online fishing e-commerce site in New Zealand. And you're also in Australia. It's an eight-figure revenue business. And it's a very big e-commerce success story. So I thought it'd be very interesting to people to kind of learn about your story. So hello, Graham.
Hey, Matt. How's it going?
It's going all right. I mean, obviously, we've known each other for many, many years. So, I've been around your I've been learning about your business for a long time, over the years, you tell me about it, but it's been a fantastic ride. And I think when I first met you, and you started going, but you was fairly still early days.
Yeah, so, I think we'd been going about 1 or 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
Sort of shifting from that sort of amateurish side of tent into turning it into, a proper real business. It was that kind of transition time, really.
That was very interesting times. And I think that it was around the times when, there was a lot of those deal sites, wasn't there? There was, it was the Groupons and the Grab Ones and those kind of things were kind of coming up. And you kind of launched a little bit on the back of that, didn't you?
That's right. We kind of, the way we started is we did this kind of weekly deal thing in fishing and boating. And there were a lot of these sort of daily deal sites, so we sort of launched with that kind of idea. But we changed quite a lot since then. We sort of decided that there was an opportunity to sell all the products and present all the categories to our market, as well as doing those sort of weekly deals.
Yeah, so the weekly deals originally were the thing, weren't you? There was those six products and that was it. But then you gradually put the categories underneath it and you use those deals as your recruitment to your email list, which then you could sell other, fishing things later on. And I think now, really, if you look at the site, no one would consider it a deal site. It's a fishing, it's a massive fishing site, isn't it?
Well, that's right. Yeah, we've got over 100,000 products on our site now.
Wow.
We still do the weekly deals. We still sort of send that email out. And it's still, we really do still see ourselves as an email marketing company. And I think that's been quite key, is not to see ourselves as just an e-commerce company, but to see ourselves as an email marketing company, and that that's really important in driving the traffic, keeping people interested in the site, and bringing in sales. People buy something on special and then they go and buy a bunch of other stuff as well.
Yeah, and I think fishing really sits with that, doesn't it? Because you've got a passionate audience. I mean, they like nothing more than kind of looking at fishing stuff and buying fishing stuff, so it really lends itself to email, because they're interested to get the emails, they want to see what's on sale, and they'll buy probably multiple times a year. I mean, how often a year would an average person buy fishing stuff?
An average person? I think our core would buy, every sort of 2 months.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really good. So you have a really long, strong lifetime customer value then.
Yeah, that's right. Forever, I hope.
Yeah, yeah. So when you were getting started, you mentioned before we were talking, you started out and there was two co-founders and you were one of them, and it was in the other co-founder's bedroom you started. And so it must have been pretty embryonic at the beginning. And, you know, did you think it was going to turn into this huge, you know, New Zealand's biggest fishing business, or was it just having a go?
It was kind of an accident, really. My business partner, who's my nephew, he was selling some fish binders. There's sort of marine electronic things you stick on your boat to see what's going on under the water. He was selling those on Trade Me, which is New Zealand's kind of eBay version equivalent. He was doing well, and I just told him, listen, mate, you should set up your own website. And so that's kind of how the original idea started. And we've always kind of been big on this whole sort of bootstrapping idea. So, you know, if we want to do something or get an idea, you know, it's about testing it first. So, you know, we started the business with $14,000 worth of capital, and we haven't put anything else apart from our own sweat equity. But
yeah, you've never raised any capital, and to get to that stage is impressive. And I imagine a lot of people have tried to invest over the years.
Yeah. Even now we get people approaching us. People like to back a winner.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of important to start off small and test, and then grow things organically. But yeah, he had boxes all around the hallway of his house, fishing rods across his bed. You know, he tells stories of all the boxes sort of falling on top of him in the middle of the night when he's asleep.
Yeah. People on my 10K core group like that, they've literally got to the point where if they have any more containers arrive of stuff, they just can't put it in the house, and they literally have had to go and go into their first warehouse.
Yeah.
So what was that like when you first got your first warehouse, and was it a big warehouse, or?
It was pretty exciting. It was quite small. It was about 200 square meters or something. We've got nearly 4,000 square meters now.
I imagine the fishing industry in New Zealand was quite like, I don't know, kind of stick in the mud, and kind of like people didn't want to sell to you and didn't want to, you know, deal with you because you were too small and things like that. Like,
Very difficult industry to break into. That's been our battle the whole time, is just convincing the brand importers and the agencies to sell to us, to support us, because it's a very closed industry. People kind of got upset by the whole, you don't have any costs if you're selling online, which is absolute bullshit. You know, I actually think costs of selling online are, you know, depending on your business, can be higher than a conventional retail store. You know, you've got to have technical people, you've got to have graphics people. You know, you've got to have quite a significant team of experts driving your business. And they're not just till operators, you know, they're educated, trained, you know, experts. It has been a very difficult industry to break into.
But, did you have to have a, like, because I know you set up in one of the warehouses, you set up a shop, like a physical shop, which was, I mean, it was a real shop, but obviously having a shop in the middle of nowhere was, you know, was that a strategic thing, or, and what happened with that?
Well, yeah, we set up a little shop just to satisfy the criteria of us needing to be a retailer. That's what opened some doors for us. But that's actually grown to be quite an important part of the business, because, you know, if our website is just basically a massive shop window display thing for our showroom, so there's always there's always people that want to go and get something now. But you know, they've looked at your website, they've read the details, they've researched what they think they need, and they're ready to buy. And what we found is that our website was being used as like the research tool, but then people would go down the road and buy from our competitor. So we were actually effectively making the sale, but missing out on the
final. Right, because some people just wanted to physically buy.
They want to get it right now, you know. Yeah. They want to get it now, or they've just got one last question, or they just want to pick it up, you know. Yeah. So
it's also a confidence piece, isn't it? I mean, even if people don't come into the store, they see you've got a physical store. They know that they can, if something goes wrong, they can actually physically come and talk to somebody. I think that is, you know, that's important.
Absolutely. It's part of that whole trust thing, you know. You've got to really think about trust as a whole, actually, you know, and sort of put in place as many things as you can think of. To build that trust, you know, whether it's the reassurances on your website or whether it's the reviews software that you build, or, you know, that's one of the key things of e-commerce, is just going all out on doing all the different things you need to do to build that trust.
Yeah, like the third-party reviews and the reassurance and the security messages and, know, that we've got to visit, you know, this is us, this is our team, we are real people. You know, here are our LinkedIn profiles, you know, like, so people can actually see that it's a real business. I think a lot of people, when they start out, they kind of put their website up and they go, oh, there's my products, buy it from me. And it's like, well, you know, who are you? I mean, you if someone went into a physical store, they'd want to talk to somebody and they'd see them. They go, oh, okay, this is a real person. I can buy from them. But it's, you know, it's not that kind of like, you know, you put this e-commerce site up and you kind of hide behind it, is it? You've actually got to, you know, do technology and messaging and things to actually be able to speak to customers. I imagine your live chat is pretty busy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm amazed at the number of people out there, e-commerce sites. You click on there about us and it's just like this very generic spiel about how we value our customers, but there's nothing actually about us. There's nothing actually about the individuals in the company. And I think that's part of building that trust, isn't it? It's that whole personalization thing.
Yeah.
You know, like
you've got to be into the thing you're selling about. You know, like you and Antonio are into fishing, you know, and it comes across. I mean, if you were like me running a fishing business, it would be like, well, he's never been fishing in his life. He's not going to know what a soft bait is.
You're scared of getting into a boat, aren't you?
Not scared of getting to a boat, just scared of catching a fish.
You into the water, right?
Yeah, and you go out on these little kayaks and you're fishing and you go, oh, there's a hammerhead shark. That would make me uncomfortable.
I'll tell you what, I took my granddaughter out last summer in the kayak. She was just sitting on my knee and we went over a school of hammerhead sharks. There were probably about 20 of them.
God.
And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I didn't want to really scare her, so I just called them hammerheads. I didn't use the word shark. But but now she knows all about hammerheads. She still doesn't know that they're sharks. But
They're not as big in New Zealand, are they? The hammerhead sharks. It's kind of like some of the places, but
you get big ones. But these were I don't know, a couple of meters or.
Sharks are.
And you know they're pretty safe animals in general.
Yeah,
they just scare the fish away. It's a bit annoying.
Maybe one day, Graham, you'll get me out on your kayak.
Yeah. We should stop talking about it. Actually, do it.
Yeah, true. Not in this weather, though. God, that'd be horrible. So I think you and I have been asked a lot of people who want to start up e-commerce stuff in Australia and New Zealand have talked to both of us about it. And I think I was going to ask you kind of what misconceptions do you think they have about setting something up and what mistakes do you think they make? And now there was a handbag company that they had quite a lot of money and they were going to set up and they wanted to basically dominate the world with handbags. And I think we gave them advice which they didn't follow, and then they spent a lot of money and failed. So do you have anything to
validation, testing your products, got a market, you know, that there's a following that you can establish. Mm-hmm. See if you can sell it on Amazon or eBay, see if you can get some sales, and test the price point.
I think they thought, because they got such a successful business in wholesale, that they could just kind of go, oh, we're successful. If we spend a couple of million on this, then we'll be successful. And I think that the same thing applies. It's like, you have to find a market. You have to relearn the business. It's like completely different, isn't it? You know, if no matter how amazing you think you are in your head, you still have to kind of come to where the market is. And it's like you're mining for gold. You've got to find that vein of gold, and once you find it, then obviously you can go and see how big it is. But if you don't, you know, you can't just randomly go, I'm going to dig in this place because I'm important, and therefore this will be where gold is.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, that even people who have been successful in business, they seem to forget, don't they? Just it's like Facebook advertising or AdWords. You know, you don't go and create an ad group and spend $1 million on it before you look at your conversions, do you?
No.
You know, you put in $100 into it and you see what you get. And then if it works, you put more money in it. If it doesn't work, you try something else.
Yeah. I see that in e-commerce as well. I see when someone's had success in one e-commerce area, like say they've been selling clothes for a big brand, and then they'll come to another brand and they'll go, well, this is how you do it. And it's like, well, no, that worked for that business because of their brand and because they did this and because they were known for this. And then you're trying to put the same things in place for the other business. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work. I mean, if you took the success you took from Marine Deals and tried to sell, I don't know, your own brand of lipsticks, I imagine that you'd probably have to relearn a lot of things about selling products or not.
That's a different market. It's a different, you know, customer avatar. It's a different, I think sometimes success makes people forget. I think they know everything.
Also business plan to knock the wind out of you, that when it hits the customers.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, people want to buy from, it's not just that they want to buy from the experts. They want to buy from the people that know what they're doing. You know, we've got a competitor and they just started selling e-bikes. That was just so off-brand. People buy from them because they believe that they know all about sort of marine products. And then all of a sudden they started selling e-bikes and, you know, they wasted so much money.
Yeah.
It's just,
it doesn't fit, does it? It doesn't fit because you go, oh, I know Graham. He knows fishing. I've got a problem with fishing. So yeah. I will hire the products he's got on his website to do those jobs for me, to get those jobs done. If you suddenly started selling, I don't know, cars, you'd be like, I don't know. I've got a car problem. I'm not going to go to Graham for it because I don't think he knows any better than I do about it.
No.
It's horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah.
So over the year, I mean, you've obviously, you know, you're constantly making changes to the website. You're constantly improving things, and your in-house team is, you know, it's fantastic at implementing those things. So what are the game changers in the business? Have there been any kind of like aha moments over the years, you know, from implementing something where you went, well, I wasn't sure if this is going to work, but wow, this is good.
That's a hard one. You warned me you were going to ask me this one, and I haven't really thought that through. But I mean, we have had aha moments.
I can give you some hints. I think I know some of the ones. I mean, you started sending an email on Wednesdays. You used to send one every week, and you know,
yeah.
What did you do with that one?
Oh, that was a 24-hour special. Yeah, that started working really well. So I think doing different kinds of email marketing. So originally we started with doing, we talked about it before, started doing this week, these weekly six deals a week thing. And so we sort of varied things a bit. So we do a 24-hour themed special. So it might be, you know, marine electronics, or it might be stuff for your boat, or it might be a certain brand fishing rod, or, you know, stuff like that. So that's worked really well.
Do you think, and so obviously if you just sent them the six weekly deals out again, it wouldn't have worked. It was because you themed it differently. It looked like a different email, and then people were ready to accept it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, and we do other things now. So we do what we call flash sales. The Europeans use that terminology a lot, but we don't use that expression much down here. But, you know, we'll do voucher code sales. So we see that as a way of rewarding people for staying on our database. You know, they'll get a voucher code, which gives them, you know, $100 off a reel or something like that. And that's kind of like an insider type deal. And we've also invested a lot in much more targeting type emails. So rather than sort of send the same emails to everyone on our database, well, you know, we might do a special on this category of product to the people that have bought from that category before, so we know they're interested in those sorts of products, and so we'll just send a promotion.
And would you do that on a different, I mean, because obviously do they still get the blast emails on the Monday, and then and the kind of themed email on the Wednesday, and then a targeted email somewhere else, or
So we have what we call our signature email, so they go out to everyone, and that's what we promote to people as a benefit of signing up in the first place. And then as we learn about people, we send them different stuff that's targeted to them. So obviously a lot, you know, it's not going to as many people, but they're you know, the conversion rate's amazing, you know. So
And also, I think you've put in the products that they recently viewed on the site and things like that, didn't you?
Yeah, and we started doing a lot more personalization. So in that, yeah, actually, I should mention that midweek email, what we do is that themed email, we might have, say, 100 products on special. In there, we personalize products out of that special in that email for that person. So it shows a representation of the products that are on special inside that email, and I think that's quite important. I think a lot of e-commerce businesses make the mistake of just doing banners and just looking like a really, you know, they're really focused on looking like a slick marketing company, but they forget that at the end of the day people are interested in products. So it's always good to show actual products in an email, I feel.
Yeah. Especially if you know that they've looked at them previously and that they're interested in them, and that's really what they, you know, because there'll be types of buyers, won't there? There'll be certain people who want to fish for certain things. There'll be certain people who want to fish off a boat or off a rock, or I don't know what I'm talking about, Graham. You know, there'll be different types of fishing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Or it's not just fishing stuff. It's a lot of boating stuff and as well. And, you know, they might have been looking at a certain fish finder or a certain brand of lures, or, you know, so we'll show them in
the, do you do much with have you ever got involved with like influencers, like big fishing people who are known in the industry for certain things, or, you know, has that ever been a part of the business, or is it
well, we're actually sponsoring the Fishing and Adventure Guys. That's a TV show that's on once a week, and these two guys go out for a fish. They're great. They're really popular. Sort of similar story, humble beginnings, and not quite knowing what they were doing in the beginning. So that's working well for us.
But it wasn't really what you used at the beginning. You didn't.
No,
I mean it wasn't. No. I guess it wasn't really around influencer marketing right back then. There wasn't really even Instagram when you started, was there? So yeah. It wasn't like,
I think you had to be quite big before you start getting into that that type of marketing. I think in the beginning, it's really about high return on.
And so what was your main route to market? Was it AdWords or was it Facebook or, you know, what? Because obviously in order to get people onto the email list, they have to come to the site in the first place. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we, and especially in the early days, we concentrated very heavily on building that database. And we realized that people liked entering competitions and we could get our target market if the prize was very specific to our market, i.e. a fishing trip somewhere. Something that appeals to sort of the core, hardcore, you know, types.
Yeah, something that wouldn't appeal to, like, if I probably wouldn't enter a fishing trip competition if I won it, then I'd have to go on a fishing trip.
No, and that would be a disaster for us because you wouldn't buy anything from us.
Exactly. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? I think in the UK, competitions can work well, but there's a lot of those kind of free competition sites that just drive these kind of, like, competition enters and just enter just for the sake of it. So you have to be careful. You just don't end up with a lot of crap.
That's right. Yeah.
But I think it's worked well for you because you've gone very specifically for the specific prizes that only really they'd care about. And also, I think you've done the ones where they have to put a team together as well, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yep. And so, you know, you enter the competition, then you have to nominate a crew. So it's actually three of you entering.
Yeah.
So you enter the email address of your mates, and those mates get an email to opt in.
Yeah.
So it's a great way of growing the database because you're getting your customers to nominate their mates.
In at the moment, it's absolutely hoofing it down here.
What's that? Oh, where you are?
Yeah.
It's blue skies here. But it's been a shit winter, hasn't it? And this whole lockdown thing's ridiculous. It should let us go out, Mark.
Well, I'm out in the van sitting in a car park.
Are you one of those creepy guys with binoculars and a...
Can't see much through binoculars today.
Hearing through the rain.
Nothing to see.
Actually, anyway, another thing we did in the early days, Matt, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but we used to send students down to the boat ramps. They'd go there with a clipboard and enter people into competitions that way.
So they're just target market. People launching fishing boats is just absolutely bang on, isn't it?
Yeah, and we did this over 3 or 4 years, and we got to the point where over half the people we were entering were actually already in our database, and that's when we stopped. But it was a very good way of building that initial critical mass. It's quite lo-fi, you know, it's not very scalable, but, you know, would get.
Anybody who's in that kind of passionate niche could go down to an event and have a competition and just sign people up, couldn't they? And say, by entering you, you'd agree to, our marketing emails, and then let you know they're the target market. So it's a great way of actually recruiting customers or potential customers, isn't it?
There was
something you did that was crazy where you sold a mystery box where you said it was a box and you didn't tell people what was in it. And that went nuts, didn't it? What was that?
Yeah, what did we call that? We had a really buzzy name. I'll remember it in a minute. But it was like $30 or $40, and we sent like 7 items, you know, some soft baits and some jigs. And but that was actually very difficult because we didn't expect the response. And a big thing for us, we realized in the early days, is that when people get their order quickly, they're always surprised, and that's what they see as good service. So if someone orders now, we want to ship it to them today, and we want them to receive it tomorrow. That gives them that little dopamine hit, that, you know, that pleasure of instant gratification. And we worked out quite early that was going to be really important for the business. But yeah, when we did that sale, I had my daughter in there helping us pick and pack, and she got her school friends in. And
why did it go? Because there's a box of stuff that you could say there's stuff in this box, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's like a mystery box of fishing stuff. And then did you say in one of the boxes was going to be something big, like a...
That's right. We gave away a whole bunch of really valuable stuff. So if your box came, you might get a fishing rod, even though you paid $40. You might get a $200 fishing rod.
But most people got some soft bait and a few different things.
Yeah.
But you said you wouldn't do it again because you thought it hurt the brand. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't do it again because some people, I don't know, that you might not get that expensive rod, you know, and you might think, well, actually, I've paid $40, and if I had to go and buy this, it might cost, you know, $40 to $60. I haven't really...
And I don't want this, you know. I've got stuff I didn't actually need.
There were a few unhappy people. I mean, and we made them happy again, but it was a bit of a, you know, not everyone understood that it was kind of like a lucky dip.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what we were selling, is a lucky dip.
Yeah, interesting that it went massive, though. It was just huge, wasn't it? It was just
people wanted to use it. People like wanted, that chance thing, eh? That win, might win something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you're selling other people's products most of the time. So you know, like Shimano reels and other brands and fishing that I have no idea about. But is it just about price? And if not, how much can you get away with and how much more can you charge, or why? So I know it's a lot about price, but is it? But talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's, you know, you hear a lot of opinions out there, and people seem very black or white about it. I think it's important to be regarded as having the best prices. You know, if you sell a very popular reel, people are going to shop around because this is e-commerce, this is the internet. People are going to surf and they're going to look at your competitors. And if you're more expensive than your competitors, you're probably not going to win. Not going to get the sale. So you do have to have a pricing strategy. You do have to have technology to help you manage those prices so that you're not, so that you're not beaten on price. But at the same time, you can't just rely on that. So, you know, we have got competitors out there that nobody can find, but we're aware of them. And some of them, they'll charge, you know, a ridiculous price, but they don't sell. And the reason they don't sell is because they don't provide the other things that people want. So, you know, it's you do have to ship people's orders quickly. You do have to fix things quickly when they go wrong. If they're not happy with it, give them their money back. You know, if something breaks, just replace it. Don't piss about. You know, give them a really good experience so that, you know, over time, when the occasional site does come along and he's $10 cheaper, they'll still buy from you because you've given them a good experience. So, you know, you don't get arrogant and go, oh, I'm going to charge more than everyone else, but at the same time, you know, be the best price, but don't rely on that alone.
Yeah, and I think it's like in the UK, a lot of people would sell on eBay, but they might be loads cheaper. But I think, you know, an eBay seller, you don't have any refund policy, and you know, an auction is an auction, and it's gone. So I think you're basically saying, you know, be price competitive, but don't go ridiculous, and don't be price competitive against people who are just tiny people who maybe have just got a little bit of like off the back of the lorry stock that are going to go away and is not a real competitor.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the final question I want to ask you is, so basically let's imagine you were starting an e-commerce business today. And let's say you know, obviously you know what you know, about it. What would you start and what would you sell and why?
I think I would sell. I like the idea of selling stuff where you're going to build a database and you're going to build repeat business. I think those businesses where, you know, it's you only make one transaction ever with a customer, I think they're quite risky businesses. You've got to buy that transaction every time somehow. I also think it's quite important that you identify a community or that you're selling to an identifiable audience. So you do have a way of targeting to them. So it's not just random. Random products. And I think it's quite good to get into an industry that's hard. Gardening.
So you're saying
or plants, hard, or, you know,
hard as in what? From a, hard to get into in terms so that new competitors won't pop up all the time, or hard?
All of it. Hard because it's hard to build an e-commerce site covering those technical products, or hard because it's hard to get agreements with suppliers, or hard because you've got logistic issues, or but also, you know, something that you're passionate about, I guess.
Yeah. So something with a decent sized community that will have a demonstrated propensity to spend often in that, and something that is, you know, quite maybe technical, or you know, maybe need a bit of knowledge to get into it, and something that you can build. Basically, I think the best businesses, the best e-commerce businesses, are email businesses, aren't they? Because fundamentally, when you come to sell the business, that is the asset that people are buying, is the customer list. And if you've got a big customer list, but they only ever buy once, like you say, you're selling wedding dresses, that customer list is worthless, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Unless they get divorced and married again.
Yes.
In that case, you should be promoting divorce, saying sell the wedding dress and then sell the divorce package as well. So
they could just follow up the next day. Here's the wedding dress.
Divorce now.
Yeah. Are you married yet? Here's the divorce package. Here's the divorce bonus.
Yeah. Oh, God. But no, that's a good example of something to be quite careful about, because it is a one-off interaction.
Having that ongoing relationship means it's just so much more lucrative in the future, and I think it covers a lot of sins in terms of, you know, you can make mistakes and still make money, whereas if you are constantly focused on recruitment and that is the way you think, then, you know, like let's say you know, with marine deals, let's say AdWords suddenly became ridiculously expensive and Facebook came ridiculously expensive, you would still have a very, very successful business.
Yes.
And you would be able to, you know, you'd be, and it probably you wouldn't hurt you very much at all. Whereas if you were selling, I don't know, that maybe you're selling boats like one off and you had to sell that through Facebook, you'd be over, wouldn't you? Because people only buy those boats once every 10 years or something.
That's right. Yeah. It's almost like you want to be the Google of your niche, you know. Like I want people to come onto our website and search for whatever marine product they need on our site. So that to me is like a gauge of success, you know, that they're not that we're not reliant just on Google advertising or Facebook advertising or even email marketing, that, you know, that they that they consider our site as the place to look. It's a bit like people going to Amazon and searching for stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead of using Google, you know.
Yeah. So you're basically like, oh, if there's something to do with fishing, they'll have it. And you go on there and you'll find it. Exactly. So then you're not even reliant on marketing there. You're reliant on the goodwill in people's mind, which is ultimately what you want, because then the company just works on autopilot, really, doesn't it? A lot of the stuff, because people are just buying and buying and buying, and they're looking to see what you've got.
We can just sit on the beach.
Exactly. As we should do soon.
Yeah, why are we not sitting on the beach, Matt? Why?
It's because we're not allowed to leave the country, Graham. That's the main problem.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, soon. Anyway, thank you very much, Graham. That was great, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy it. I mean, it's always good to have a success story on and talk about the process. And I think that what you've achieved is incredible. And I think if people should, you know, go and have a look at it and see what you're doing and learn from you, because you're a very humble person, so you wouldn't shout about it. But what you've achieved is phenomenal, really. And in such a small country, and that UK people won't realise, you know, what it's like living in a country with only like 4.5 million people. It's actually, you know, that's a very, very small market to go after, and to build an 8-figure business in a country that size is huge. So well done.
Thank you, Matt. And you've been very helpful along the way as well. So
just mostly for taking you out for coffee, stuff like that. That's about it.
Yeah, that's
just,
right.
Yeah. Listening to your story.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Graham. And
all right, Matt.
I look forward to speaking to everybody soon.
All right. Bye. Okay. See ya.
Bye.